A few weeks ago, I was at the opening night of the Christmas Spectacular at Radio City Music Hall. There were rockets kicking high above their heads. There were fuzzy characters dancing around to the music of the Nutcracker. And at the very end, there was a parade for the nativity scene. And there were actually live camels and live sheep. And they all came out, and there they all are, in this grand parade of this story that we are so familiar with. And as I stood there sat there and watched this, I thought, how did this story become this? How did this story that happened in the darkest corner of the world to people who were nobodies, to people who no one cared about and no one knew, how did it become this grand production on one of the biggest stages in the world? It's pretty amazing. And we've heard this story so often that we think we know it inside and out. I think there's nothing new to learn in this story, to read the scripture over and over and over the last couple weeks, to get a little deeper into it, to see beyond things like this and Christmas pageants that I've been in my whole life. And I was reading a biblical scholar named Kenneth Bailey, who lived in the Middle East for many years and who writes from his knowledge of both the Greek and his study, cultural anthropology study, and also what he knows about living in Middle Eastern culture. And he says we actually may have the whole story wrong, that when it says there is no room at the inn, that the inn may not even refer to an actual inn. And this picture we have of Mary and Joseph being turned away would probably never have happened in Middle Eastern culture, where the hospitality is so deep and family is so important that even if he had been removed generations from his family in Bethlehem, if Joseph had showed up and said, "I am Joseph, son of, and the son of, and the son of," and goes all the way back to David, which he would know and would be a part of him, that they would be welcomed into any family home. And that particularly if there is a mother who is about to have a baby, that they would also be welcomed in and not turned away. So what actually might have happened in this story, Kenneth Bailey suggests, is that these Palestinian homes, and still to this day, many of the places that are traditional and in the far reaches of Palestine, these homes have two rooms. And one room is the primary room where all the family activity takes place. That's where the cooking is done, that's where the family gathers, that's where they sleep. And then there's another room in the back that's reserved for guests to stay. And in that front room, there are also these two mangers that look out into a window where the animals are brought every night, and then the animals graze actually in that family room in the evening. Because they want the animals to be safe and close to them at night. So when it says there was no room at the inn, that word for inn could also mean that back guest room, that there wasn't any more room because so many people had maybe gathered and there was so much family there. And so Mary, instead of giving birth all by herself in this stable, and you're welcome to just put this aside on Christmas Eve when you just want to enjoy the story as you know it, but instead of giving birth all by herself in the stable, she may have given birth in the family room where there actually was room and placed her baby in that manger in the middle of the family room, which I don't know about the rest of you who have given birth, but being by myself in a stable sounds a lot better than being in a family room with all sorts of people all around. But that may have been what happened, especially given the cultural realities of the Middle East and their deep hospitality. But this story is so familiar to us, and it's become so embedded in our cultural narrative, and we've heard it so often, we can barely hear it anymore. But we revisit it again every year, and we look for something again to bring peace and hope and love and joy into our lives where we're living. This story is beautiful because there is the birth of a baby. There's the gathering of strangers in response to that. There's the sense of hope and promise that in the darkness there is light. The story is also terrifying because it's set in the world's most desperate circumstances, set in an empire where lives are threatened, set in a place where there is a despot who is insecure enough to order the genocide of babies. I love this quote by Frederick Buechner when he said, "Here is the world. Beautiful and terrible things will happen. Do not be afraid." Don't be afraid. These are the words the angels say over and over, because often good news, even the best news, comes to us with both beauty and terror. Things that really matter, things that can transform our lives, the places where we are healed, are not coated with glitter and polish. They are beautiful and terrible because they illuminate the dark corners of our lives and our world and invite us to a bigger story. I wish that we could all take a congregational field trip every year or some year to Guatemala, like a group of 18 of us did a few weeks ago. It's an opportunity to connect with this original story and with this sense of what can happen in these corners, unseen corners of our world. This year, when we were there, we met a man named Ephraim. There he is. Ephraim is a mason, and he lives in a shack, in a row of many other shacks. And his wife was cooking dinner for them over an open fire, as many people do there, and with all the potential problems that can bring in terms of respiratory issues and issues with your eyes. And his wife came to him and said, "Hey, I've heard about this program where they will help us build a smokeless stove so that we can cook without this fire in our home. And they will help us build a latrine so we can have a sanitary place. And they will give us a water filter so our children," it's 4 to 6 children that they had, 6 children, thank you, "can have clean water to drink." And Ephraim wisely listened to his wife and agreed to have this built in his home. And as they built the stove and he helped and he watched, he recognized that this was a process he knew very well as a mason. And so when they left, he finished off the stove with tile. And when Josue, who is the local affiliate director, came by to see the stove, he recognized this craftsmanship that he had never seen in a stove before. And so he asked Ephraim what he does for a living, and Ephraim said, "Well, I'm a mason." And so Josue said, "Well, would you join us?" And so now, thanks to the gifts of this congregation, thanks to the gifts of the Bend Rotary, which we made a connection with through this church, there are stoves that Ephraim is helping build all over his community, and helping build latrines, and helping bring water filters. And we were privileged to work with him on the days when we worked on stoves, and his heart and his sincerity and his faith were so evident and graced us all with his presence. Ephraim lives in a corner of this world. He's unseen to all of us, but God sees him. And from that corner of the world, he's reaching out to other corners and finding in those places real live transformation. When the angels appeared to the shepherds, they came to a corner of the world. These shepherds had nothing to do with the hipster farm-to-chic, farm-to-table thing that we think of these days. They weren't gentlemen farmers by any means. They were the lowest, most despised people in their communities. They were seen as dishonest as they grazed their flocks in the fields of others. They were despised and dirty. They probably weren't even allowed into the temple to worship because they were seen as unclean. I imagine that they were like many of us are many of people in our society who we allow to do the dirty work. Those who are immigrants or convicts or people who just struggle to be in the mainstream of society. And isn't it amazing that that's where God came? And that's where God made the announcement. The announcement of the angels may have been pretty spectacular with all of the singing and multitudes of angels, but their announcement was about another corner in the world. It wasn't saying, listen to the flashy headlines, or hey, here's this leader that's going to rescue you. The announcement was that there's this other tiny little corner in a house or in a stable where there's a baby lying in a manger, and that in that place lies your hope. In the corners of the world, beauty and terror are twins. It's in the places that we most fear that we find the most hope. In the places where we don't, would rather not look, in the places where we'd rather not open, where our healing lies. It's in the places we don't want to go that God is waiting for us. It's in the people who are invisible that the reality of God is most visible. We may know that, but getting there can be another thing. Psychologists tell us that when fear comes into our minds and into our bodies, and we feel fear with our whole bodies usually, we have this fight or flight or flee or freeze mode that we go into. And it's hard to make choices in that place of fear. Biblical scholar Walter Brueggemann says it very clearly. When we live according to our fears and our hates, our lives become small and defensive, lacking the deep, joyous generosity of God. If you find some part of your life where your daily round has grown thin and controlling and resentful, life with God is much, much larger, shattering our little categories of control, permitting us to say that God's purposes led us well beyond ourselves to live and to forgive, to create life that we would not have imagined. The shepherds offer us a way forward in those corners of our lives, in those places of our fear. First of all, because they kept listening. When the angels came and their initial response was to be afraid, they didn't run or flee or try to get away. They stayed and they listened. They listened beyond their fear. Fear can so easily shut down our curiosity. We stop being able to hear something in a new way, but the shepherds kept listening to the angels. They stayed with their fear until it expanded into a completely new and different way of looking at their world. Second, the shepherds went to Bethlehem together. They made a connection with Mary and Joseph. They shared their news with their community. The shepherds were living in authentic community and talking to others. So often in those places of our fear, we shut down. We're afraid to let others in. But the shepherds refuse that kind of isolation. And when we begin to speak about our lives, begin to speak about the things that we're both afraid of, the beauty and the terror, we find our healing begins to happen in authentic community. Dark corners exist in all of our lives. Anxiety, depression, fear, shame, anger, sickness, grief, addiction. Here is the world. Beautiful and terrible things will happen. Do not be afraid. If Bethlehem is a reality anywhere, it is in these places of our lives. I don't know all the corners of this world, like the places where Ephraim lives, but I know a few. And this week we've watched the devastation and annihilation of people in Aleppo. Men and women shivering in homeless camps. Immigrants who were fleeing for their lives from violence and not finding any open doors. Will we have the courage to hear that the good news is not found in an imperial palace, is not found in a flashy headline, but is found in the corners of our world? And will we have the courage to stand with people who are in the corners of our world? Will we face the beauty and terror in our own hearts and minds so that we can see the grace of God present in hidden places in our lives? Let's not stop listening to the corners. These are the places that God dwells. These are the places of our transformation for ourselves and for our world. And this is the message of Christmas. Amen. I'd like to invite our ushers to come and receive this morning's offering.